All right. Thanks for continuing with this really interesting journey we've been on with virtual events. I hope you engage with our experts in the chat. While this has been pre-recorded, the experts are here to talk to you. Unless you didn't participate day of, shame on you, but you'll still enjoy the content. Let's go around the panel with introductions. We have a star-studded panel. Let's start with Bobby and then work our way to Joe, Matt, and then Tim. Bobby, introduce yourself.
Hi, Keith. I'm Bobby Allen. I'm CTO for Cloud General based out of Charlotte, North Carolina, which we like to call Silicon South. Thanks for having me.
Hi, I'm Joe Peterson. I'm the Vice President of Cloud and Security for Clarify360, and I'm visiting with you today from Southern California.
Hey, everybody. Matt Wallace. I'm the Chief Technology Officer at Faction, and I'm joining you today from my basement in Denver.
All right. And I'm Tim Crawford, CIO and Strategic Advisor at Evoa, joining you from Southern California as well.
All right. Thanks for the introductions. Let's jump right into the conversation. Let's set some boundaries. And this first question is for Tim. Tim, what's going on? Are we seeing like mass exit from all the cloud providers? Like, is this cloud growth thing of public cloud, is that real and or is that fake and everyone is just leaving that? Like, what is cloud repatriation?
It's a great question, Keith, but let's be clear. It's not happening in mass. It is happening, but it's not happening in mass. What's more important is to understand the reasons why it's happening. And this kind of comes back to the fundamentals of, I think, what we're going to talk about in this discussion, which is what are some of the challenges that people are having that's causing them to rethink moving their workloads or moving their applications from public cloud infrastructure back to their corporate data center or to even co-location or to another infrastructure. So I would say it's not happening in mass, but it is happening, and there are very good reasons why it is happening.
So, a question for the panel in general. Is it an incrimination or a sign of bad management or strategy that companies are repatriating workloads? What are some of the drivers? Let's talk about that.
So, Keith, I'll jump in there. I think that repatriation is happening for different reasons. Sometimes it happens because people didn't plan well. But I'm going to throw something out there for the panel to critique or poke holes in. I think a lot of the issue is because people don't understand the value of what they're running out there in the public cloud. So, for example, here's one of the questions that comes to mind. As the expense of an application goes up, does the value of the application go up? And if you can't answer that question, here's another one to kind of pose. Is should an application that does not have unlimited value be placed in a place that can have unlimited scale and spend? That's what I think a
Well,
lot of corporations are wrestling with.
yeah, I think to that point, there's definitely a question of what value you expected to get, right? When you embark on a cloud project, there's some outcome that you think that you're going to have, right? That drives the business case to go do it in the first place. I think there's a certain level of naivete on some organizations' part, thinking that it's going to look different, that it's going to cost less. And it could be that they didn't, begin their business case thinking about, the savings you get from lighter touch operations, or it could just be that they thought their bill was going to be X number of dollars, and it turned out they didn't account for things like egress charges or, access fees or, the premium support they decided they needed or things of that nature. And by the time all those things got added together, it completely trashed their business case.
I guess the thing that I would add is the planning part, right? When they went to put the workload in the cloud, they maybe hadn't thought about the global impact of what was going to happen. And by global impact, I mean that, the IT folks that did this hadn't really thought about perhaps data sovereignty issues. So they've all of a sudden got holdings in the EU. Or maybe they acquired a firm that was in the EU, and now they've got to worry about, well, how can I get this to work? Pardon me, how can I get this to work in the EU? Because I've got all these constraints that I didn't have before. So as we were sort of talking offline a little bit, it's part of the planning and the maturation process. Business happens, and then does that cloud strategy that they set forth really match what the business needs?
Yeah. I think there are two aspects that I look at. One is you've got organizations that are comparing what they're doing in public cloud to what they were doing in their corporate data center. And those are two completely different environments. I think the narrative around cloud is cheaper has really kind of gotten us into trouble, or that cloud is just another data center. That's gotten us into trouble from setting us off on the wrong mindset. So one dimension is don't think about your existing workload or existing application and moving it to cloud just like you would move it to another data center. The second piece, and it was kind of something that Bobby kind of touched on, is you have to think about the value aspect of this. A lot of folks look at what they're spending in cloud and say, I'm spending $1 million a month in cloud services. Oh my gosh, the sky is falling. And the reality is you should be asking yourself the other dimension of that value equation, which is, okay, I'm spending $1 million a month, but I'm actually making $5 million a month because I've done that. So great, that's a 5x uptick. The question shouldn't be at that point, hey, how do I reduce that $1 million to spend? The question should be, how do I turn $1 million a month into $100 million a month into spend? Because that would in turn have a 5x uptick on your value. And so looking at that value equation on one dimension is important, but also equally important is looking at the back end piece of not comparing what you were doing traditionally with public cloud.
Tim, I want to stick a pin in this value conversation and the conversation that IT definitely needs to start having with the business. So it's not just as simple as, oh, we spent $1 million in a data center and now we're spending $1.5 or $2 million in public cloud. Therefore, public cloud is more expensive and we need to repatriate. But before we get to that point, Joe, I wanted to probe a little bit more on one of the points you made. Data sovereignty is a interesting aspect of the public cloud, because now instantly where I had barriers of entry to going into, let's say, the EU or to more restrictive governments because I just couldn't build facilities. Now, public cloud makes that available. How much of data sovereignty, IoT, et cetera, are you seeing as drivers for, if not repatriation, pauses in cloud strategy?
I wouldn't say that it's necessarily pauses, but I think it really takes everybody in the business getting together and talking about what is important, right? So everybody's got to be on the same page. And the IT team shouldn't have to figure this out themselves. They need help from management. They need help from regulatory. They need help from legal to figure out if they're doing things correctly. I read that, the China cybersecurity law, for example, requires companies to follow localization requirements for what the government calls important data, but it's really hard to define what is important. So I feel badly sometimes that I feel like IT teams are trying to figure this out by themselves, and that shouldn't be the case.
So yeah, good cloud strategies definitely start with governance on some level, and you can't leave it up to a cloud architect or your IT team to go and tell you what your cloud governance strategy ought to be. Even in terms of how your strategy for creating multiple accounts and having them roll up from a billing standpoint works, to what are the security requirements and who's allowed to create and who maintains, a footprint or a view of the footprint of resources in different regions. Those are all important questions to answer. And if you just kind of leave it up to chance as you embark upon, lifting and shifting before you answer those questions, it's going to be very difficult to have a good outcome.
So this is the CTO Advisor virtual event. So we're talking primarily to technical resources, but again, executive level technical resources. So most of us in this room, in this virtual room, can go to a CIO. We can go to a business line, business leader, and have a one-on-one conversation and kind of have these thoughts. But let's think back to the architect and the CIO organization that doesn't have that bridge to the business. What are they missing? Like, it seems like a really big miss that I've spent $1 million going to public cloud, and now I'm pulling back these resources. There's a business conversation that hadn't taken place to at least identify that this is a valuable thing to do and we should keep doing it, or to identify this was too expensive and we need to pull back.
Agree. Keith, I think a lot of the problem is that some of these things are done in silos. The typical architect who has to figure out a cool way to do stuff in the cloud and make it cloud native and so forth is not responsible or equipped to figure out things like total cost of ownership or licensing or how to consume it so things are done in a good way. For example, we talk about architects who are really good at moving from scale out to scale up. We don't emphasize what about scale in and scale down. Architects don't get recognized for saving money. They don't get recognized for being efficient. They get recognized for coming up with designs that can scale to 1 million customers, even though we might not have 1,000 who are yet using that application.
So the wrong incentives I'm hearing architects specifically are being given. How do we start to change that? Like, is this a skills gap? Is it a, like, where is the core problem? I'm an engineer by trade, so I'm trying to get to a root cause analysis. Like, why are we having this problem to begin with? And how do we solve it?
So let me jump in on this, Keith. You know, I think the first step is we should be asking ourselves, why are we even having this conversation in the first place? You know, if you're thinking about moving to cloud, why are you moving to cloud? If you're looking at it as, hey, it's going to save us money, or it has a mandate tied to it from my executive team that we have to move as much as possible to cloud, you have to understand the reasons why you're moving to cloud, and then start to kind of pick that apart and make sure that you're making the right decisions in terms of what moves to cloud and how it moves to cloud. This is where things like lift and shift really start to show the kind of ugly truth of taking what you were doing in your traditional data center and just simply moving it to cloud because I had a mandate to move it to cloud. That's not going to fly. You're going to run into significant issues, and the first thing you're going to see is cost as a problem. And so I think it's important, especially for architects, to step back and say, okay, I heard the mandate, I heard the conversation, I've heard the narrative, now let me do my own homework. And kind of to Joe's point, I do think that it's a team sport. It does require input and engagement from other parts of the organization. We have to break down these silos, because cloud does start to venture into other spaces. It's not as simple as saying, hey, we're swapping one server manufacturer for another. It's not that simple. There's a lot more at stake here that we have to consider. And that's the piece I think that's missing.
So Keith, I want to piggyback on something that Tim said, because architects are often working at an application level, to Tim's point, that's where the decisions are made, but the financials are often kept at a data center level or a server level or an infrastructure level. So people are talking past each other. I'm coming up with a design for an application, but I can't tell you what it costs today. So if I say, if we move this to cloud and make it cloud native, I'm going to save 20% on the app, I have no idea what that app costs today. The average enterprise CIO cannot give you a TCO of an average application in their data center. So they can move it all, or they can move none of it. Or what ends up happening is the individual line of business CIOs will take their apps to the cloud because they want more transparency around the costing. So we're talking past each other because the financials and the technical architectures are at different levels.
And let me just Definitely. Add another piece to that, Bobby. Actually, two components, which is around cost. The CIO, and I know we're focused on the technical architect, but to exemplify that point, the CIO typically doesn't have responsibility for the real estate and even electrical costs within the data center. You know, there might be a pass down or pass through cost that comes into the IT organization, but they don't necessarily get all of that cost. So there's a visibility problem around the data center in terms of its true cost. When you move to cloud, you're now picking up all of those costs regardless, right? It almost goes back to an old saying, kind of dates me a little bit, but if you truly want to know what something costs, outsource it. Because at the end of the day, you will truly figure out what it's going to cost your organization to run that application.
Yeah, I see this a lot, actually, even working directly with customers where they have specific budgets for specific cloud-related projects. And once you've kind of put together that and you start looking at it from a TCO perspective, they go, well, why is that so expensive? And then when you start kind of itemizing all the things that go into it so they can understand where that TCO comes from, they'll look at a cost like data center and go, well, I don't actually pay for data center. But of course, you know that their organization pays for data center. And that can extend to some very strange places. Like occasionally, you'll see people who are doing this for either a function like disaster recovery or an application in particular, but they don't even pay for the staff that maintains it or the people who design it. I think there's something interesting too about the question of architecture, because there is this delineation that I have in my mind between the function of a cloud architect, which to a certain extent, you know, can take what you want to do in the cloud and design your cloud consumption and your use of cloud services to fit that need. And then the enterprise architect, right, who is much more, I think, the tip of the spear for understanding who the stakeholders are in the business and understanding what outcomes you want to get and understand, you know, cross-functionally how all the teams have to work together, you know, to pull in viewpoints, like what is the financial viewpoint, you know, what is the security and compliance viewpoint. And if you don't have that function in your organization, you can have a sort of random outcome, I guess, going to the cloud because you are leaving so many considerations out. And to Tim's point, it's not just a question of, you know, lift and shift. You're not merely mapping workloads into the cloud equivalent, because if you do, you're missing out on all of those other very important aspects of that transformation.
Well, you guys gave me two really big topics to talk about them, and I hope we have enough time to cover them in depth in both areas. One, I need to be able to identify the scope of my cloud migration. On the flip side of that, once I've identified the scope and I put it to test, I need to understand what I need to pull back into the data center and what I need to kind of push the pedal to the floor and go forward with on public cloud. But in order to do that, I need the skill set within my organization to even identify these opportunities and challenges. Talk to me about the profile of the types of people that I need, and then the organization of where they need to sit inside of my organization.
I think an enterprise architect is definitely like very much one of those key skill sets, because at the start of a cloud project, you are definitely going to have to address things holistically, right? So you're going to have somebody who is familiar with looking at the financial point of view, who can actually go to stakeholders and understand, you know, what's the outcome that drives the project? What is the value that we get from it? And ask, what are the costs that go into it? How do those costs change over time? Not just specifically, you know, for the use of cloud resources, but, you know, questions of people who have to be pulled in, the soft resources from in the organization, right? And what you kind of take and add to the project from your internal resources, right? But they also have to have, you know, the technical resources that you understand what are the possibilities for moving a workload to the cloud. Because certainly some people do lift and shift things. It's not always the wrong choice necessarily, but you have to understand you're not necessarily getting the true value of cloud. If you can do things like transform the application, replatform it in whole or in part, right? Make some pieces serverless, move certain application components like a database into something that's managed, maybe you can realize bigger gains. And yet there's complexity in that too, where cost comes into play between those selections. You know, is there an ability to get rid of the sort of waste? We all know that if you size something for your own data center, you have to size for that, you know, high watermark of consumption. Moving to the cloud, you have that ability to scale things down, so you're not usually using as many resources and you can scale up. But you have to ask questions of, do you have the skill set to set that up? You know, are you going to be successful scaling up and down, and how much will that save you? All this complexity, obviously, and ignoring that complexity is what leads to the negative outcome when those things aren't considered, and then you get surprised on the backside. Although, do I want to say, like, even though we're talking about repatriation so far that happens because people moved to the cloud and they didn't get the outcome they want, there is a whole other side of this where smart technologists and great organizations who move to the cloud and then spend tens or even hundreds of millions, you know, very high-profile tech companies, then repatriate for other reasons. So I'll table that, but it's worth talking about too, because there are other reasons to come out other than just it didn't work out like we expected.
And I think that's a maturation question. And Bobby, I want to drill down on this skill set gap a little bit, specifically with you. And I think you might hopefully be able to clarify some of this for us. In my mind, as just an engineer, VMware in my data center is VMware, in Google's data center is VMware, in AWS data center. This seems like just a back of a napkin, math problem. Uh-huh. Is it just the math that I need to be concerned with, or specifically to some of Matt's points, what are some of the aha moments that you've seen clients realize once they've actually done the work?
Yeah, that's a great question, Keith. So to compare that, to kind of play this back, so I can run VMware on-prem, I can run VMware off-prem. And there are a couple of things that are interesting about that. So one, if I have a level of discipline or a lack of discipline in the data center, that lack of discipline hurts me a lot more in the public cloud, right? So I just gave my teenager a set of car keys and now they can do a lot more damage. So VMware in the public cloud can connect to all sorts of other resources and things that can get me in a lot of trouble. And so number one, the math is challenging because typically VMware in the cloud is a big bucket of software-defined resources that I often can't break down and compare to native services. But back to the prior point, I can connect to all sorts of other things now. I can provision storage and services and software and other things. In my VMware data center on-prem, there's only so much that my cost can get to. There's a ceiling that's kind of fixed. But again, in the public cloud, I've now let my ideas and my lack of discipline run wild. And I think that's part of what scares people. So if I'm going to go to cloud, I'm going to take the VMware tax, so to speak, to public cloud, but then now give it access to all these other things. I think that's why a lot of CIOs have been given pause about that. I need to refactor more of my culture than just take existing paradigms on-prem and move them off-prem. I've got to change some of the behaviors to make sure we're being more efficient, resizing resources, and thinking about why we're doing what we're doing.
So let's talk a little bit about scope. And this is getting to, I think, the maturity conversation. So I've gone to public cloud. And I've realized, wow, there's something that I didn't account for, whether it's power, people, speed, agility, et cetera. And we have a problem. And the problem usually surfaces in a bill. There's an unexpected bill that I've received. You know, I've gone to VMC on AWS and I expected the VMware Cloud on AWS build to be X, and it's actually X. But to Bobby's point, wow, now I'm leveraging RDS. I'm leveraging all these other solutions that I didn't expect. We need to pull the plug on cloud and repatriate. But before we do that, what's the conversation that needs to happen?
I think that the conversation is on what does the business actually need? So Keith, I'm going to kind of mix this question with the prior question that you talked about in terms of skill sets. We need people that can dream about what's possible, but then also balance that with what's practical. So if you have a white piece of paper, yes, I need to fix the car, but don't put a $10,000 transmission into a $2,000 car. And some of the times what we're doing is we're gold plating applications that are close to end of life, don't have a lot of value for the business, or about to get retired or killed off anyway. And so we're not being practical. So yes, dream. You know, if I put my project manager hat on, Keith, this is about being able to balance unconstrained requirements with constrained requirements. Dream like you have a white piece of paper, but then act like the budget is coming out of your check. That's what's not happening. That balance is what a lot of teams and people don't have in place right now to make sure they're juxtaposing those two competing priorities. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Since you asked the skill set question, I just really want to say this is a really incredibly rare combination. And because I've had, you know, teams reported to me that had, you know, product management under their purview, product development, architecture, I will say that the number of folks out there who kind of bring together an architect's mind, thinking about how design works and who stakeholders are, people who bring product management to the table to ask, you know, what you're trying to accomplish and who the end value goes to and what the purpose is, who have the technical skills to actually answer deep technical questions about how you implement things, but then can also sit down with something like a spreadsheet and do math on like how the financial costs work out, just incredibly difficult to blend those. And I think in the industry, you know, as we migrate more towards cloud models, you know, we're going to have to be on the hunt for people that have a different skill set. In the same way that 10 years ago, we were telling people who were administering network devices, hey, you're going to have to get better at APIs in the future because so much of this is going to be API driven. We also have to be telling technical people, like, you have to be, you know, comfortable with a spreadsheet so you can show how something that you design works out at scale. Like, we have to get those soft skills into the process.
I wanted to say something about what these gentlemen were saying. And I want to take a step back, because the cloud strategy that we chose 5 years ago, whatever that was, I think we as you know, resources to IT organizations need to say to them, is that still working? And the reason is, we go into a number of companies. I was working with a private equity firm the other day, and they were showing me the spend cube of all their holdings. And they said, we just want to save money. I said, okay, why do you have all these hyperscalers? And they're like, we don't know. So everybody needs to get on the same page. Maybe the business has grown. Maybe there have been acquisitions made. But what worked for you 5 years ago, the question you need to ask is it working today? Before you just go try to figure out how to just save money with what you've got going on. That's not really the problem.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. That's a really great point, Joe. And I would exemplify that by saying, even what you had planned to do 6 months ago, you really have to go back and rethink that. But there's another dimension to this that we have to think about as well, which is when you move that application out of your corporate data center to public cloud, you still have that footprint in your corporate data center. You still have those costs in your corporate data center. So you haven't saved anything yet on the corporate data center side of the equation. So it's not truly an apples to apples comparison. And this is where, and just one of many examples of where people tend to get tripped up, is it's not an ability to be able to say, hey, when I move this application across, and if I did that planning, to Joe's point, if I did that planning 5 years ago, and now I'm finally getting to move these other pieces as part of this larger project, I mean, God forbid, if you're doing a cloud project, that could be problematic in its own right. But larger projects in large enterprise are still multi-year ventures. And you have to think about all of these different components coming together. And I think that just exemplifies the earlier point that it's not just the architect, it's not just the CIO, it's not just the cloud administrator or system administrator. All of these different personas have to come together. And also, you have to think about some of those soft skills that have to be layered in here. This is not just a technology problem.
So this is not just a technology problem. And repatriation is also not just a technology decision. So I'd like to turn the conversation a little bit more to Tim and Joe, because I think this is more of your level of expertise. How do we have that difficult conversation? Like, repatriation for some things, to Madden Bobby's point, sometimes the application just isn't the right fit for public cloud, or Matt hinted to, we may have gotten to a scale where public cloud was the right thing 5 years ago for this application, but this application is static and we can probably do it cheaper and better ourselves in a private data center. How do we have that difficult perception conversation that repatriation is not necessarily a bad thing?
I think there are a couple of dynamics there. You're right. Scale is one component, but I think we have to be careful, because scale for an enterprise is very different than scale for a web scale company. You know, if I were to try and simplify this a bit, a web scale company has 4 applications, but at massive scale. An enterprise has 4,000 applications, but at very small scale. And so scale is one piece that you have to ask yourself, what are the alternatives, and then do an apples to apples comparison of that. There also might be other aspects, as Joe mentioned earlier, kind of picking up on the point about regulatory and compliance and sovereignty issues and privacy issues, which are in constant flux around the globe. It's not just European communities that are having to contend with this. We have to deal with this on a state level here within the US. And so there might be changes to legal frameworks and ramifications that you have to consider too. So there could be a lot of different dynamics. Your customers are changing. where your customers are coming from, your supply chain, your business operations, all of those are currently in flux. And with the pandemic and economic crisis that we're dealing with right now, that statement is X-fold. We have to rethink how we're architecting from the ground up, because the rules of the game have changed. It's not a matter of someone played a chess piece in a different direction and I have to think about how to move my piece. The board changed, and we have to figure out how to play within that new chessboard.
I think all of that's spot on, Tim. And I don't ever want to call anybody's baby ugly, right? But there are people's, you know, there's people's emotions, and people have stakes in some of the designs that they've done. And one of the advantages of working with private equity is it's cleaner, right? Everybody understands that it's about value creation. And what I mean by that is I go in and we look at the spend cube for that hyperscaler, and we go take it right back to the architecture, Tim. Just like you said, we go, hey, here's some things that you can do that are going to save you money, and that might help the situation, right? You have a one-on-one ratio between you built your cloud like you built your data center, and you don't need to do it that way. So let's rethink that, right? We try to get them back to the architecture standpoint that both Bobby was mentioning and Matt was mentioning, to say, is the baseline right? And then we can really have a conversation about what matters to the business as soon as we get that baseline right.
Yeah. You know, Joe, I want to kind of bridge off a point that you made there, which is, you know, talking about the baby being ugly. I think that's absolutely important for us to talk about. And what I mean by that, or how I'm thinking about it, is you made decisions to move to public cloud or to do something with an application based on a certain set of assumptions or a certain set of criteria that drove that decision. It is what it is. So don't go back and say, okay, well, that was dumb, or maybe we shouldn't have done that. That was made at a certain point in time. You're now at a different point in time with a different set of inputs. And now you have to rethink, okay, was that decision really the right decision to make? Maybe it was back then. Now we're at a different point. Now what's the decision we should be making? So I just want to support what you're saying there about just being careful that we don't necessarily ostracize decisions that have been made in the past, but rather times have changed. How can our decisions change to be able to accommodate that?
So let's leave the last set of questions, or last question, off on a semi-technical note. I've made the decision that some level of repatriation is the right move to make, but I've gotten out of the data center. Do I have to go back and rebuild a data center to right-size my locations and workloads?
I don't think you do, Keith. And I think it's a great question that you asked. Number one, there are what I'll call off-prem kind of semi-private providers, colos, et cetera. There are other options. I won't mention specific vendors, but there are people that do that, right? It doesn't have to be in a hyperscaler. It doesn't have to be in your data center. There's somewhere else that can go. But I think the other part of that is that public cloud, Keith, in many ways was an opportunity or an excuse for people to innovate. And so now that we're going to move it back somewhere else, one of the things that comes to mind, and I've said this before, when we were comparing private cloud and public cloud, I questioned, did you have a private cloud or did you have virtualized chewing gum and duct tape? So maybe you can refactor what you had going on in a private location and be more efficient now, looking at HCI versus CI or something like that. So anytime you're looking at a move, just like if we were moving in real estate, it's a chance to declutter and to get rid of those ideas that don't make sense, that don't make sense to carry with us to the next venue.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just piggyback on what you're saying, Bobby. You know, 15 years ago, I was leveraging other people's data centers. It wasn't cloud. It was facilities. It was rented infrastructure. And just to be clear, I'm not talking about outsourcing. Outsourcing I did as well 20 plus years ago. But what I'm talking about is where I took my VMs and moved them to someone else's infrastructure and was able to run it on someone else's infrastructure. And so I paid a fee based on the portion of that infrastructure, that shared infrastructure that I was using. If I needed dedicated infrastructure, it was available. If I just needed a cage to be able to put my servers and infrastructure into, that was available as co-location. So I think there are a lot of different mature solutions that have existed for a long period of time. I mean, 10, 15 years, that's eons in technology speak. But I've done it very successfully. Those options still exist today. So I don't think cloud or your corporate data center are the only two options. There's a myriad of different options in the middle.
All right. So if you're watching this panel presentation after it was aired live, you've missed a dynamic conversation in the chat room. Our experts really got put to test on some of the answers, and a little bit tangents went on. I'm sure of it. I'm predicting into the future. Watch out for the next CTO Advisor virtual event. We'll do this again. Not quite sure when, but you know what? The same way that you found the event, you'll find it a second time. Thanks to our sponsors. And this conversation about co-location, well, oddly enough, we have it on the agenda. John Freeman from Freeman IT Services, who helped build the CTO Advisor hybrid infrastructure and our selection of a co-location, will talk about all the factors or some of the critical factors in selecting the data center. He's on the agenda for 3 o'clock this afternoon Central. Stay tuned for that one. Hope you've enjoyed the virtual event. Make sure to fill out the survey and help us improve the event. On behalf of my entire expert panel, thank you for taking out the time. Talk to you next session.